Professor Michael McCann gives his predictions on trends in sports law for 2021. This is The Legal Impact, presented by the University of New Hampshire Franklin Pierce School of Law. Now accepting applications for JD, graduate programs, and online professional certificates. Learn more and apply at law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Mike, this is my first podcast after the winter break, and I just feel like ripping off your recent Sportico article for content. Does that work for you?
That works great. Anytime. Great.
Let's start off with the plague-infected elephant in the room, essentially. What high-level impacts do you see COVID-19 having on the leagues this coming year?
Well, I think the big one is that leagues don't know when the pandemic's going to end, and they're in contractual relationships with players, with sponsors, with TV networks, with season ticket holders. There's this great uncertainty as to when the world will return to normal. And we know it's not going to be a light switch. It's going to be a gradual process that will lead, we hope, to many Americans getting vaccinated and phasing in opportunities for businesses to restore their normal activities and for customers and for people going to games. But there's just still a lot of chaos. We don't know when things are going to get back to normal or even what normal will be in the aftermath of the pandemic. So one big issue will be contractual relationships, not only for pro sports, but also college teams. When will students be allowed on campus? That's a question that many universities are grappling with. There's just a lot of uncertainty. And of course, we know that there's some percentage of the population that doesn't want the vaccine. And that's relevant because it means that the pandemic could continue for a long time, perhaps, if it turns out that people won't take the vaccine. So these are all great uncertainties.
And going off of that, you mentioned some possible issues with the MLB and the players union.
Yeah. So Major League Baseball and the players union in baseball have historically a bad relationship, to put it charitably. And that was apparent last summer, where they were unable to reach an agreement on having a 2020 season. Now, they eventually reached one, but it took a while, and it led to an only 60-game season, which was less than other leagues. And other baseball leagues in other parts of the world had longer, in some cases, normal seasons. And part of it is just the how do they divide money between owners and players? And that's relevant now going into 2021, because they have to reach a deal for a 2021 season. And there's already indication that baseball wants to have clear vaccinations among players and staff before spring training starts. That's clearly not going to happen anytime soon, based on the slow rollout of the vaccine and the lack of Americans that have actually been vaccinated. So that would likely mean a shortened 2021 season for baseball, whether it starts in May or June or who knows when. That will mean fewer games, less money for players. They clearly don't want to do that. They want to have a season. They have argued that they should be able to have a season. They had one last year. And then fast forward to the end of the year, where the collective bargaining agreement between baseball and the players is going to expire. That could enter into a real long-term, potentially labor disagreement about how to negotiate a new CBA, particularly if there's uncertainty about where the pandemic is at that point. So it's really a mess for baseball.
Dude, to me, it seems like baseball, because they're up this year with their union agreement, is basically going to be the tip of the iceberg for probably the next 5 years. I mean, the COVID is going to minimize this year, but this is going to be an ongoing issue throughout 2021 through 2022, because we don't know how long the vaccinations are even going to last. So odds are every 6 to 12 months, you're going to need, just like the flu shot, another COVID vaccine. And if there's outbreaks in certain cities, that's going to have a tremendous impact on what teams are able to actually compete.
Right. And then that, even we haven't talked about the insurance aspects to that. Insurance companies that will, there'll be a debate, and we've already seen litigation over that, whether or not a pandemic is covered as a reason for having business interruption, or whether it's the government's rules on what business activity can occur. So, yeah, I mean, the short answer is it's a mess. And I don't, there's no simple solutions to this. I think what we're going to see is the quality of the relationship between leagues and their respective players' associations is going to be really important. Take the NBA, the league and the players have a good relationship. And
they're playing a lot of games.
Playing a lot of games, and everyone's still making money. Now, they're not making as much because there's people aren't in the arenas. In some cases, not at all. In some cases, there are fewer people. But as we know, it's really about TV broadcasting. That's where the real money is, and the games are being played. So you know, that just illustrates where a good relationship between labor and management can lead to a productive outcome for everyone involved.
I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but do you foresee contracts and leagues beginning to consider more options on the digital realm? I mean, each league basically has their own online platform they intend to use. Do you see that playing a larger role, especially with games not necessarily having audiences?
That's a good question. You figure that that's going to be the way of trying to claw back that lost revenue by lack of gate receipts is to focus on digital revenue. As you mentioned, AJ, leagues are already in that space, but it would seem to make sense that they're going to try to further exploit it to make up the money that they're lost. And of course, when we say leagues, it's the players too, because in the leagues, they're getting, it's in most of the leagues, it's a roughly 50-50 split of revenue between owners and players. So that the lack of gate receipts is an issue for all. Similarly, adding more digital revenue, using digital platforms, streaming games in a way that doesn't lose TV revenue, you would have to think that they're going to be focused on that.
Now, college athletes, the NCAA, and many states are going to be at it regarding name, image, and likeness. Do you think any productive progress will be made nationwide?
Well, later this month, the NCAA is expected to announce their NIL rules. That will be a key moment because we'll see to what extent we know the NCAA is going to allow college athletes to sign endorsement deals and hire agents. That's the sort of headline. The story, though, is what will be the so-called guardrails that the NCAA is going to put up. How much will they restrict this marketplace? And the reason why that matters legally is that we will likely see antitrust litigation brought against the NCAA and its members for restricting this new marketplace. Moreover, state laws that are more permissive in terms of NIL rights could go into conflict with the NCAA. So the NCAA might be in conflict with California law or Florida law. That itself could lead to litigation. Then there's the possibility of the federal government weighing in on this. We know that both Republicans and Democrats have proposed NIL legislation of different kinds, but now that it appears that the Democrats are going to control both houses of Congress and the White House, it would seem that there's an opportunity for federal legislation on NIL, possibly, but we'll have to wait and see.
Going off the federal legislation end of things, the presidential election is finally officially, knock on wood, locked down. Georgia's votes should be done. We're recording on January 6th, Wednesday. So hopefully everything's locked down here within the next 24 hours with all the electoral college votes that are possibly remaining. What impact do you see the Biden administration having on the sports law field?
Well, one area would be Title IX. Title IX has changed under, at least interpretation of it, has changed under President Trump's administration. And by Title IX, of course, I'm referring to a federal law that requires gender equity in higher education. So it's not a sports law. It's really about education. But it often comes up, at least newsworthy-wise, in the context of sports. It comes up in litigation involving whether there are equal opportunities for men and women who are college students and who play sports. It also comes up in sexual assault investigations. And that's where I think we'll see some changes. Under the Obama administration, there were changes of Title IX interpretation so that survivors' rights were enhanced. Now, critics of that said that it made it unfair for those who are accused. Under the administration of President Trump, there has been a growth of procedural rights for students who are accused of sexual assault, what we could see is a change back to more along the lines of what President Obama had with then Vice President Biden. So I think that's one area where we'll see some change.
Thanks for listening to The Legal Impact, presented by UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. To help spread word about the show, please be sure to subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.